The railroad line that runs through Connecticut is 115 miles long, hugging the shoreline from New York to Rhode Island. Trains have traveled this corridor since the 1800s, but now climate change could be threatening their future. The coast has been battered by several recent storms, including Superstorm Sandy, affecting low-lying sections of the rail system. And some say that rising sea levels will cause repeated flooding of those and other areas. Jan Ellen Spiegel is an environmental reporter with the nonpartisan web news site The Connecticut Mirror, and she has just finished a two-part series that examines the condition of the state's coastal rail line, what weather has done, and what it could do in the future. And she joins me in our studio this morning. Ms. Spiegel, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Well, needless to say, it's a very old railroad system. What type of damage have you found that it's endured, and is it related to climate change?
Talking specifically and irrefutably related to climate change, people are loath to do. So what we have to look at is the conditions that the track exists in. One thing we do know is a great deal of the track sits in areas that are designated flood zones by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. That means if a storm comes or sea levels rise, those will be areas that in all likelihood will get flooded. Let's take Bridgeport, for instance. It's right along the edge of the river and the harbor there. And in fact, the water runs right under the track. The track is elevated, but the water goes right underneath it.
The track is on pilings at that point?
The track is on pilings. And during Sandy, the water got high enough that it literally ran through the edge of the bank and onto the street. So yes, the track was dry, but you couldn't get to it. And that's one issue. Another thing we know, let's take New Haven, for instance. The main rail yards for Metro North are in New Haven. It's about 74 acres. It's been there in some way, shape, or form since the Civil War era, at which point it was right at the water's edge. That has since been added to with fill from the building of I-95. So pretty much all 74 acres, with the exception of the actual station itself, is on fill. It is all in a flood zone, and it has flooded over the years repeatedly. There's a pumping station in there now, but water still got in during Sandy. And as sea levels rise, it's presumed that the situation will only worsen. So those are two major, major areas that we know have problems. There's huge swaths of track that run right through Salt Marsh, especially between New Haven and the Rhode Island border. Well, what does Salt Marsh do? Salt marsh is nature's way of absorbing excess water. So if you're tracking, you're in salt marsh, that's where the water's going to go. It's beautiful. You look out the window, it's absolutely gorgeous. But how much is in harm's way? We may just have to wait till the storm hits and find out.
One long-term solution that came up several times in your reporting is move the rail line inland, further from the coast.
That's a big ticket item. As someone said, it's like moving the pyramids.
Or boiling the ocean, I think someone else said.
Someone else said, you might as well boil the ocean. Very, very hard to do and very, very expensive. We don't even necessarily have the money right now to keep the tracks and the trains in what they could a state of good repair. To then think about picking up and moving it elsewhere is almost unthinkable. I'll give you a couple of examples. In the Niantic area, the bridge was rebuilt there in the last couple of years. The track that runs into that bridge, it's literally feet from the edge of the water. At that point, when they rebuilt the bridge, they kept it there. Well, are you going to then pick up and move it again? That's very hard to do. How do you bring it inland? How do you buy up people's property? How do you change the corridor? How do you deal with other things that have been built into the infrastructure of this state over not just years, but a century and a half? there are a number of studies going on through the various agencies that have a stake in the rail system in Connecticut. There's Metro North, there's the state DOT, there's Amtrak, there's the Federal Railroad Administration. All of them are beginning to look at ways to figure out how the future of the Northeast Corridor should be constructed. The Federal Rail Administration has a very initial report, and some of their ideas were to bring extra lines, not to get rid of the line that was here, but to bring extra lines in that would literally come under Long Island Sound and then branch up into Connecticut and off towards Boston. Another was to bring it in through the southern part of the state in Fairfield County and then scoot it over towards Danbury. Those who see the train system as a very important economic driver, especially in Fairfield County, with the new high-speed link that's being envisioned up to Hartford, do not necessarily like the idea of skirting Fairfield County. That is very worrisome to people like that. So there were a number of public hearings which I did not attend, but I heard there were some folks who were not too thrilled with this.
When you talk about the players in this scenario making plans for the future or talking about the future, what do they envision as the future? And do they even agree what the future is?
Well, the future is kind of interesting if you look at the past. The rail line and the infrastructure, they often think in terms of 50 years. Well, we've got a rail structure that's about 150 years old. So, in fact, it hasn't really moved. If the past is prologue, maybe they better be thinking 150 years, which is why people are so worried that we will get very dug in where things are now, even though they're only thinking 50 years out. That said, issues related to sea level rise, folks are thinking in terms of 2050, 2080 as points where the sea levels could be far higher than they are now, in which case anything you build now will still be in place. There's also concern within the business community that if we stop to consider how climate change will play out over the next 50 years, that it will slow down the needed repairs to the rail line that is now stuck with 100-year-old bridges that do get stuck in the up position, that are in need of rebuilding. And once we rebuild them, we're going to be stuck there. Folks are worried that time is of the essence to make sure the train can handle the here and now.
You say that some of the experts you talk to, environmentalists, civil engineers, civic planners, and others, they're promoting rail line plans that stress recovery instead of prevention. Is that what you're talking about here?
The standard that most people are using now and agree that this is an okay way to go about things is not that you keep every drop of water off the track and everything must be in perfect condition all the time, but it's a how fast can you recover scenario, an acceptable risk level that you're willing to have with this particular type of infrastructure. So, frankly, they will point to Sandy and say, look, we knew it was coming. We got stuff out of the way. We moved the trains to higher ground. And we were able to recover pretty quickly, probably within a week. Well, there are those who say that is an acceptable standard of risk and that is useful going into the future. But there are those who say, look, there may well be people whose jobs rely solely on their ability to get to work by public transportation. And if that's out for a week, they don't make any money. They could lose their job. So with that kind of changing scenario, whether that idea of acceptable standard of risk will be useful going ahead. I mean, it's worth pointing out, though, and I think this is an interesting thing to remember, during Sandy, no rail cars were stored in New Haven. Remember, New Haven is on fill. It's pretty much just a few feet above sea level. It has been known to flood. All those cars were moved to higher ground. In New Jersey, that did not happen, and the cars suffered great damage. But it also tells you that maybe that rail yard isn't in the greatest place.
You talked with and quoted one person in both parts of your story. John Burnick, the assistant rail administrator at the Connecticut DOT. And one of the things he said, you wouldn't move the rail line to where the people are not now because you think they might be there in 50 years, essentially saying the rail line is where the people are. Therefore, that's where it needs to be. Once the people move, then the rail line and I suppose other transportation would follow. That seems to make sense for that 50-year future.
Yeah, but think about it this way. The rail was built along the coast going back to the Civil War era. That's obviously where the people are. We've all been sitting in traffic and seen congestion through the state of Connecticut. People are pretty much everywhere. While it's one way of looking at things, I'm not sure it's the only way. We can also take a look at the notion of this high-speed rail that's trying to be implemented from New Haven up through Hartford to Springfield. That's a place where, yes, there are people, but there are whole stretches where there are not people. And the notion is that it will be the driver that brings people, brings business, moves the business community north out of Fairfield County into New Haven County, up into Hartford County. So there's two ways of looking at that, whether the rail waits for something to drive it or the rail helps drive the economic motion.
Governor Malloy has proposed a 30-year, $100 billion transportation plan, not all of that going to rails, but it would go toward the infrastructure for all of our transportation systems in Connecticut. But your reporting says, and you touched on this, your reporting says some are worried that this type of rebuilding may actually hurt the rail line and not help it in the long term.
It's the notion that once you start spending the money to bring the system up to where many people feel it needs to be, that you will have essentially doubled down in the place you are now because there's no plans to really move the line. So you will be stuck for at least another 50 years, if not more. If you look at the existing line, it's been in the same place for about 150 years. So, yes, there is that concern. You know, you also have to look at one other thing. There's this talk of high-speed rail. Where the line is now along the shoreline, that's an old type of system. It's very curvy. It's hilly. It's not the type of place you can put high-speed rail. If high-speed rail is absolutely your goal, you're probably going to have to find another place to put it, and that's even more money. The New Haven to Springfield line also has its own flooding issues from inland water. It goes through the Quinnipiac River watershed initially, although folks tell me that the bigger flooding issues are further up towards Hartford, where it runs along the Connecticut River, and through Newington, where it runs through some other areas. It's straighter, it's flatter, but there's water inland all over the place. Amtrak tells me they are looking at that as they continue to build, but there's still some controversy around that line too.
And that brings up a point I wanted to make. The rail line through Connecticut running from New York to Rhode Island, but it's really divided into two parts, and you point this out in your series. From New York to New Haven, it's owned by the state and managed by Metro North Railroad. And from New Haven to Rhode Island, it's an Amtrak property. Were you able to get a feel during your reporting for how this dual ownership could affect improving and maintaining a coastal rail line?
Well, Amtrak also uses what we refer to as the Metro North Corridor, even though the state of Connecticut uses it. So everybody has sort of the same interest there. Remember, there's also a local service that runs on the Amtrak portion from New Haven to New London, which is the local shoreline east. There's a lot of independent study going on, and you do sometimes wonder how much they're talking to each other. Amtrak seems to be a little further along in terms of looking at the environmental impacts. Will they get together and play nice? Well, we may have to wait to see that.
In this current series, you did note that Metro North and Amtrak have made some changes along the rail line. Did you find that this was to manage the effects of weather as we've seen it happening recently? And are they reacting with these improvements to longer-term climate change?
No, I think the changes underway now are largely the state of good repair changes. It's been very clear for a long time that the system is not running the way it should. We've had accidents. We've had deaths. We've had bridges that have broken. Climate hasn't necessarily totally even been included in some of the planning for these. Plans for some of the new stations along the Metro North Corridor have been keeping climate in mind. For instance, there are plans for a new station in Bridgeport. They've made it pretty clear to keep that out of a flood zone, although a tiny little corner may be in a flood zone. On the other end, there have been a number of new stations worked on or upgraded on the Amtrak portion of the line as part of the Shoreline East stations, and some of those are smack in flood zones, like Brantford moved from one end of a flood zone to another end of a flood zone. FEMA then reclassified it as an even worse flood zone, and there's a big sign in the parking lot that says this area floods. So how much is being considered? I don't know.
The hurricane of 38 gets mentioned several times in your series. Why did you bring that up?
One of the interesting things that the environmental group, the Nature Conservancy, did is they ran some modeling of the hurricane of 1938, which basically cut right across the eastern part of Connecticut. It was essentially a Category 3 hurricane before they had those categories. And they kind of decided to look at what it would do to today's infrastructure if it were to run through, since it's been built way up before since then. And, I mean, it was something like 130 miles of rail would be flooded. Five stations would be wiped out. You throw in a little sea level rise, it gets even worse. So it's worth looking at that area to see what it would do today because the rail's still in the same spot. It hasn't moved. What's moving is the water is definitely getting higher. We've seen very, very clear evidence of that.
Based on your reporting then, are the decision makers, the players in this story, are they anywhere near a common starting point for talking about how to plan for a sustainable rail line much farther down the tracks, if you can forgive the pun?
I don't think so. I think there are some studies underway, but is environmental planning the absolute first thing on their list right now? No. The absolute first thing on their list is to get a lot of the old infrastructure repaired so there are not so many delays. They want to get people where they're going safely and quickly. I think that's the number one goal right now.
Jan Ellen Spiegel is an environmental reporter with the nonpartisan web news site Connecticut Mirror. We will have a link to her two-part series on our website, wshu.org. Ms. Spiegel, thanks for being with us today.
You are quite welcome.